Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Talking with Heroes talk show program. I am Bob Calvert. I am the founder of TalkingWithHeroes.com and your host for tonight's program. For those of you listening for the first time, our website is TalkingWithHeroes.com. And if you want to have some history about what we've been doing for the last 9 years, including all of our trips over Iraq and Afghanistan, just add /about to that, and it'll pull that page up. We also have an online news site, thankyouforyourservice.us. You'll find out about all the programs we've been doing, and every day we get new stories to add for, by, and about our men and women who serve and who have served, and their families, and also the organizations who help them across the country. Some of you may be wondering, you know, this is Monday when this is airing, and normally we're on Thursday night. Thursday night is our regular program that I committed to about 11 months ago to interview the membership, the members, organizations of r4alliance.org. And it's just been an amazing experience to me listening to all these veterans and what they're doing to helping their fellow veterans. A lot of recreational therapy programs we've had, just amazing stories that have come out there. But some months ago, I talked to Captain Roman, and I did some programs for her when she was deployed in Afghanistan 2 years ago, and she asked if we could do some more call-in programs, but this time with the 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division. And we did a few of them a couple months ago, and well, tonight is another one of those call-in programs with 3BCT, 25th Infantry Division. And so tonight we're going to be talking to a 16-year Army veteran with many deployments, Iraq, Afghanistan. He has served our country for 16 years. He had a lengthy tenure with the Ranger Regiment and involvement with the Special Operations community. And tonight, Major White is going to share a little bit about his service and about himself, but he's also going to share with you all across America about the Pacific Pathways. So, Major White, I'd like to welcome you to the program, and thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you, sir, and thank you, listeners, for hosting me.
Absolutely. If you don't mind, if you could just kind of start out and share a little bit about yourself, talk about your service, maybe start out, you know, what motivated you to actually enlist in the Army, and just talk a little bit about your military career.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think for me, coming from a military household, the decision to join the military seemed like a natural one, really. My dad was a 31-year Army veteran, a veteran of Vietnam War. Never put any pressure on me, but it was something I was always passionate about just by seeing his passion, really. So I grew up, you know, in that military household, moved around a lot as a kid, but eventually settled down in the southeast, in the Georgia area, Atlanta, suburbs, northern Atlanta, where I went to high school, four-sport athlete in high school. Just very active in the JROTC program there, and was appointed to West Point in 1996 and did 4 years there. My first duty station was Fort Benning, Georgia. I was an infantryman, and still am. That's normally the first duty station for infantrymen. I found myself going back there several points in my career, but through Fort Benning, Fort Bragg, eventually Fort Carson, Colorado, Fort Lewis, Washington, stint in Washington, D.C., and now in Schofield Barracks, Hawaii. It's kind of just ran the gamut of locations, I guess you could say, and units, really. Most of my service has been in Special Operations Force units, primarily with the Ranger Regiment, as you mentioned. And it has meant quite a few combat deployments. But at the same time, it's been extremely rewarding. You know, it's always difficult to be away from family and friends, but when you're doing a mission that you believe in and you're part of a team that you trust and enjoy being around, and you know your time is enjoyable and you know it's worthwhile. So that's always been the case with me, and I've been very blessed in my career so far.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you sharing it. So I live by Fort Carson, by the way, just so you know. Due to my son-in-law, his second deployment was from Carson to Iraq. But I have a really good friend at Fort Benning, Bill Wisniewski. You may run into him out there. He's been filming for the Airborne Association out there for 15 years. Anything to do with the airborne, the drops, the trainings, the award ceremonies, one of his people is there. And he's retired Special Forces himself. So I've done a number of programs on Fort Benning, too.
The name doesn't ring a bell, but it's a small community. I bet you I'd recognize his face.
I wouldn't be surprised if you did, as long as you were at Fort Benning. I'll mention this to him. Actually, I'm going to send him a little email afterwards, shoot it over to him. You've had, about 4.5 years combination of deployments overseas, Iraq, Afghanistan, is that right?
That much. It's definitely close to four. I think it's about 40 months deployed. But, primarily Afghanistan and, the special operations community, the deployments are typically more frequent but shorter. So I think I have 7 deployments to Afghanistan and 3 to Iraq, dating back to 2002. And, so that really covers the gamut of the high points and the low points of our time in both countries. But, again, always with great men and women, and that's all services. I was almost always in a joint environment, which made it really that much more enjoyable, I think, just because you're sharing techniques and procedures and really hardships as well, the highs and the lows with all the services, which, as you know, are all great men and women. So,
exactly.
It's just been a blessed career, and happy to still be doing it.
So now you're at Schofield Barracks in Hawaii, and I know you all had just finished a big training a month or so ago. And so are you right now in Australia?
I am, yes.
Okay.
We arrived here several weeks ago.
Go ahead. Okay. Talk about, because I've been hearing a lot about it, I've been trying to read as much as I can. Talk about this, I don't know if you call it a mission, Pacific Pathways, a campaign. Talk about it. What is that?
Yeah, you're probably right in calling it more of a campaign than a mission. At the strategic level, really what it is it's the military's answer to the president's rebalance to the Pacific that I'm sure you've heard about in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
The concept itself really looks to just employ trained and ready, in this case, Army forces, through what they call a training pathway, and that's the name, Pacific Pathways, where it gets its name. And what you're doing is you're conducting consecutive bilateral, and bilateral I mean the U.S. with another nation, one nation at a time, but in consecutive order, typically an order of three, so one country, then another, in a training pathway where you are, we use the term building partner capacity more than anything. You're strengthening that partner nation, and these are all partner nations. These are, UN nations, ones that any tourist really, I think, would feel comfortable going to. And you're building that relationship, strengthening those ties, and gaining a higher degree of what we call interoperability, just the ability to work with, plug into, and execute operations with these partner nations. So it's yes, a strategic campaign, but also down to the very young private or seaman, it's all the way down to the tactical level. It builds that capacity and it ensures regional security. And it absolutely answers, in this case, the president's rebalance to the Pacific.
Sure. What's new about the Pacific Pathways today from what it's been?
I think it's just different in terms of the way the Army has traditionally deployed.
Okay.
In the past, we would send multiple units to a region. It would normally be on a rotational basis. The pathways really streamlines all of that. It picks one, I would call them lucky brigade, in this case the 3rd Brigade Combat Team from Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, and assigns them the pathways mission. We know, you know, months and months out. We can see far out on the calendar, so these units know it's coming, which is also great because it allows them to learn aspects of those countries they'll be going to. And it sends that unit on the pathway, allowing them to train prior to a very high degree. Typically, you will enter the pathway having just completed a combat training center rotations, or CTC. In this case, we just finished the Joint Readiness Training Center, CTC rotation, in Louisiana. So that is, if you were to picture like a, I guess, 18-month training evolution for a unit, they almost always end with or peak with a CTC rotation. So we just finished ours in Louisiana in June. You know, so right. Here we are in our first Pathways Nation in Australia, and just executing the charter of the pathway.
Okay, I have a question that was sent to me about Pacific Pathways, asking if it's an attempt by the U.S. to inject its military into another region of the world on a broader scale.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's
okay.
The Army's been present in the Asia Pacific theater for decades. We've participated in long-standing bilateral and multilateral exercises with our allies and partners in the region. So really, the Pathways concept just seeks to take into consideration today's, as many of the listeners I'm sure understand, the fiscal challenges facing our mm-hmm. military, the regional complexities and friction, and the many opportunities to work with these Asia-Pacific allies and their militaries to enhance, again, both the cooperation and interoperability. So there's no hidden agenda. It is really what you see is what you get.
Okay, and how long does a pathway last?
In our case, the one we're on, I think this is typical, about 90 days. As a general rule, you'll spend about a month in each country. There's a lot, like Pacific is huge, as you know, so it's not as simple as jumping on a plane, touching down in that nation, and starting a one-month pathway. There's definitely shipping vessels involved. There's millions of dollars of our equipment going overseas to be there when we need it. So there's a whole lot of logistical planning that goes into the execution of a pathway. So you find yourself in the midst of one, and about, you know, 2 weeks out, you're prepping for the next. Not everyone. I mean, it's transparent largely to the younger soldiers who are in the thick of the training, but for the leaders like myself, I mean, you have to. There's that alone is a great leadership challenge and a great tool for training both staffs and young staff officers. The proper ways to deploy more than anything. So offers a lot for all.
Okay, and because being over in Iraq and Afghanistan, I've seen kind of how many soldiers are involved in deployments and all that a little bit. How many soldiers are involved in a pathway without maybe getting too specific?
It varies, to be honest.
Okay.
It typically is a battalion, so you're talking upwards of 600 soldiers, and smaller battalions would be as low as, in some cases, 200. So that's the ballpark figure. And I should mention, it's not our entire brigade combat team that deployed. Our brigade itself is much larger than those numbers. So when I said earlier that it takes a lucky brigade and sends them across the Pacific, that is true. But it's really just a segment of that brigade, in this case, a battalion minus. So, again, two to 500 soldiers, and it actually does vary. We start off big, and we kind of taper off by the time we get to our third country, just based on status of forces agreements and those bilateral previously arranged agreements with host nations. So start big, get small. But yeah, as a ballpark figure, 200 to 500.
Okay. You know, in other previous programs like this with a colonel and some other soldiers, Captain Roman, I wanted to ask this and I forgot, but is this different or how is it different from what the Marines already do in the Pacific?
I think more than anything, it's just different capabilities. I guess the most obvious one is nothing we're doing is on the water, and the Marines, typically there's a Marine Expeditionary Force or MEF afloat, multiple at one time. And so they really get at the landing aspect, really beachhead to inland aspect of the equivalent of a pathway that they do, whereas we are land-focused. We stay on the land for the entire pathways. We the soldiers, are not on those ships I mentioned, so that's our equipment that's afloat. The soldiers themselves go by air. But certainly the Marines, you know, have partner nations that they've been training with for years. It's just, in the simplest terms, I think more water-focused for them. Whereas, as you know, we are a land component.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now you mentioned about different size units, too. What is the benefit of using, like, one unit versus multiple units? Or is there?
Yeah, I think so. Really, I mean, Pathways, I think it seeks to decrease the back-and-forth costs of several units by just utilizing the one. And by doing so in a sequential manner, you're able to take advantage of the time in between to add different training opportunities and activities to get out and explore selectively. It's, you know, this is definitely not a field trip. It's not a vacation, but at the same time, you're in, you know, I'm in Australia. I've never been to Australia before, so
sure.
The leadership will take the opportunity to allow the soldiers to see a part of this country outside of just the military side, just for the life experience of it, you know. So there will be cultural immersion activities that we'll have a chance to, you know, see parts of the shoreline and activities at the beach and those types of
sure.
of things, but later on, towards the end of the training evolution.
That's good. I was wondering if they were going to get to have that kind of recreation. I was over there in the late 80s. I'm a little older here. Anyway, and the thing that got me the first was driving on the other side of the street. It must be interesting with your military vehicles and stuff, or do you not go on the streets like that? I'm just curious.
No, I mean... Yeah, you're right. It is interesting. It's a little shaky there for some. But yeah, you're on the other side of the road, yet our steering wheels are on the left side, just as in America.
Uh-huh.
So we're having to kind of just drive slower, and some of the vehicles are big, so you just have to be careful. But it's interesting, to say the least.
Sure. Now, you mentioned a little earlier something about cost. Is there a cost to Pacific Pathways, or how much is the cost?
You know, I mean, I don't know exact figures. Nothing the military does is cheap.
Right.
In the end, I would tell you it saves costs because you're really getting ahead of the training power curve by being proactive and preemptive in your attempts to align yourself with these nations. That, in the case of Australia, for example, I mean, I've I remember my first deployment in 2002. Australia has been with us since day one. You know, Great Britain has as well. So, and not until, you know, a couple weeks ago when I hit this country did I formally get a chance to train with them. It was always execute combat alongside them. So, and if you measure, if you were to measure cost in the terms of lives, then the cost is, you know, priceless. The ability to train over here and just, again, learn how they do things. They learn how we do things. You know, at the philosophical level, we're saving each other's lives. You know, I mean, it's really just neat to see the relationship build and those techniques being shared. But I don't have a hard figure for you.
No, it's okay. I didn't expect a hard figure.
Yeah, but the president's budget, you know, there's a definite premium on the Asia-Pacific theater and that rebalance I spoke of. So the defense budget absolutely accounts for it.
Okay, now you talked a little bit about the gains that the Army, the soldiers, are gaining from the military to military training exercises. And I'm assuming also the Australian military and the other countries, they're gaining too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they build the partnerships, the long-lasting relationships, and it's, you know, it's a win-win. If there's a phrase to summarize it all, I mean, both nations benefit, and if we were to ever deploy with Australians again, we would just be that much more in line and responsive to their needs and us theirs. Because, I mean, you know, there's many similarities between the two countries, but there's also many differences. The lingo, the equipment, the procedures they use for their, you know, military maneuvers. Those, all of those take time to learn, valuable time, especially when you are deployed. And so this just gives you that base before you have to learn it while deployed for the first time when the upstart costs are that much higher.
Sure. Now, when I was talking with Colonel Kelly last month, he was talking that there's actually other countries that you're going to from once you leave Australia, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, this pathway is Australia, Indonesia, and Malaysia.
Okay, well, hopefully we can, if it fits for what you're all doing, maybe we can get a call in from each of those countries, too. That would be good to hear more from what you're all doing.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely. Go
ahead.
Get a different perspective in each one for sure. I mean, I know Indonesia and Malaysia will be 180 degree different than Australia and what we're facing here now.
Absolutely. Now, you're the brigade operations officer with 3BCT, right? What is that involved like?
Yes, sir. So I'm the senior operations officer for the brigade. So really, it is the operations section in any unit are the ones that lay out the training path, the calendars, and align all the assets to execute the training really as far out as units can see. It's usually nested with those CTCs that I mentioned earlier, the Combat Training Center, Evolutions, and up to, you know, a couple of years ago, they were aligned with deployments. Our unit is not on a combat deployment schedule that I know of right now. So right now we're nested with about an 18-month training path to the next CTC. So my role as an operations officer is to look very far out to align the training and do backwards planning to make sure we're hitting all our training gates so that by the time that CTC rotations and then probably the next pathways, we're set up for success and the soldiers are trained on all aspects of their military occupational specialties. So it's a busy job. Most staff jobs are, but again, highly rewarding.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you sharing all this. I'm sure everybody's going to be interested in hearing everything you said. I know when I was mentioning to people about Pacific Pathways, there was a lot of questions. People were asking me, well, what is it? You know, so I appreciate you sharing all that. Now, when you was in Iraq and Afghanistan, if we had been doing a program like this, I would have asked you if you want to give a shout-out to family and friends back home. But you're away from family and friends. Would you like to do that?
Absolutely. I'd like to tell my wife, Carla, I love her, and I miss her. My mom and dad in Atlanta, Georgia, just give a happy 4th of July belated to both of them. My sisters and brothers-in-law as well, both in Atlanta and in the Alabama area. God bless all. Miss you all.
Thank you. And one more thing I was curious about. You know, again, you've been to Iraq, Afghanistan. You know the importance of care packages, letters. Is that important in the situation with you being at Schofield? Or what can people, what would you say to people in terms of supporting you all?
I mean, we get great support, I think, just in probably unspoken ways more than any. Prayers, you know, are always welcome.
Mm-hmm.
We do get just a ton of local support, especially in the Schofield Barracks community. It's a very strong veterans network there. Fairly high population of retirees. So we feel very well taken care of in Hawaii. I wouldn't say there's a need or a want for care packages while on the pathways. It's just a little too logistically challenging because
right.
the number of countries we're hitting and the non-guaranteed shipping methods. But, more than anything, just being aware, I think, for the listening audience of what your Army's doing.
But for the men and women who are serving in other areas like Iraq and Afghanistan, people need to remember that, right? And make sure they're involved in some way. This is what I always ask people, care packages, letters, just like it's been going on for years. I don't hear as much about it as I used to. That's why I brought it up.
No, you're right. We both know it's still happening. I don't hear much about it either, but there's those diehard organizations out there that will be doing it till everyone comes home. So.
Exactly. Yeah, Soldiers Angels, okay. Operation Gratitude, OI Delivers, there's so many neat people out there supporting those who serve and who have served. So you're right. You're absolutely right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come on today. Is there anything else you want to share with the American people before we go?
God bless America. 239
cool.
years
God
old.
God bless America. Pardon me?
39 years old.
At our birthday.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
Day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually,
yeah.
Yeah. The listeners would probably like to hear we have an everyday, we call it a commander's update brief. So it's just a chance for the whole staff to brief the commander. And on the 4th of July, you know, we don't have TVs in our tactical operations center. We're kind of in a very austere environment, tucked away in the outback, if you will. But we did our commander's update brief, and we just had a PowerPoint slide of an American flag, and then we, as a group, sang the Star Spangled Banner at the end of the Cub. So it was really neat just to celebrate in that way with your brothers and sisters in arms. That was awesome. Simple but awesome.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. That's neat to hear that. Well, thank you very much. And then anything we can do, you know, throughout the Pacific Pathways, different places you go, just, you know, one of your PAOs or just call me or email me. We're here to do what we can to help y'all.
I really appreciate that, and thank you for your passion for service in holding this radio show.
Well, it's an honor to do it. We'll keep doing it as long as we can, right? As you said just a few minutes ago, till they all come home. And even then,
absolutely.
when they're back here, there's so much of a need back here too. So yeah, we'll just keep doing it. Well, thank you very much, Major White. I appreciate it. Thank you for your service again to our country.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Absolutely. Well, folks, you've been listening to Major Graham R. White. He is the Senior Brigade Operations Officer with 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division, calling in here from Australia. And first time I've had a caller from Australia like this. And I always ask on all our programs, yeah, you've listened to the program, you like what you've heard, please let others know about it. We put all of our programs on social media, on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Google Plus and Pinterest and Footstomp. And yeah, I went from not wanting anything to do with social media to being in a lot of them. but there's so many great Americans out there sharing these stories. So if you're just hearing about this, maybe just listening to this, please share the story. We appreciate that. And I do want to say to all of our men and women who have served around the world, you know, and your families, thank you for your service to our country. And to those who are serving now, especially in harm's way or areas around the world, be safe, stay alert, God bless you, God bless America.